Okay, so we'll begin this morning's talk. I forget how many days have gone past now from this 2008 retreat. But continuing on from the question and answer session yesterday, one of the questions which came up was the question of autopsies and contemplating the 32 parts of the body or the 31 parts of the body and what purpose that really has for us. And so I wanted to expand on that by giving a talk this morning on the body contemplation, on the body meditations. It's a very central part of the Buddhist practice, but it's often misunderstood. And so I wanted to talk about what is the purpose of this and how one can make use of this in this retreat for one's benefits and well-being. And as far as I understand the body contemplations, you can say there's a series of benefits for them. And of course the first one is just health benefits, to keep a reasonably healthy and fit body. And I'll be telling something about that afterwards. Already on retreat, some people get a little bit sick. And sometimes a little bit of contemplation of the body and working with the body can actually help either ease the symptoms of sickness or even bring some healing. And that's obviously a positive thing, because when you have a sick body it's very hard to get into deep meditation. It's possible, but it's not sort of always easy. But next to that, that we do a body contemplation to try and find some truth about this body. It's a strange thing that we've been living in this body for so many years, and sometimes why do we have to contemplate it? Surely we know what this body is. We want to contemplate it for a separate purpose, and that's for understanding that this body is part of nature, it belongs to nature, it doesn't belong to us. And that's an important part of the body contemplation. And of course the last part of the body contemplation is to know it so well that you can just drop it and leave it alone. And as far as I understand the teachings of the Buddha, the main purpose of the body contemplation is just that. So we can just drop this body and leave it alone. So our job of doing body contemplation is nothing to do with trying to get as much disgust up as possible, to get some like weird negative freak who looks upon bodies like some of the old Christian mystics did and started to torture their bodies because they were so disgusted with it. Instead of doing things like that, which goes over the top, we just go far enough just to say, well, it's just a body, that's all. It's not beautiful, it's not ugly, it's just a body, so we can let it go and allow it to disappear. So that's the third part and most important part of body contemplation. But to go in the first part, which is really important, it's also a wonderful meditation to do, is to learn how to know this body enough to relax it, to send it good energies, to keep it reasonably healthy. Now, because health is a big problem in our life, we want to try and keep as fit as possible, and sometimes that we're not fit because we're not aware of our body. When the Western monks first went to Thailand, we would go on arms round and we weren't allowed to wear shoes on arms round. And even coming back, walking through the forest, we had to do so without shoes on. And the Western monks, like me, were always stubbing our toes on tree roots or stepping on sharp stones and sort of injuring ourselves and having cuts and bruises. And when Ajahn Chah saw that, he said, "You Westerners, you've got stupid feet." And I never thought that feet could be stupid. I could think my head was stupid, or I was stupid. But the idea of feet being stupid, and it was a wonderful reflection there, because it was. My feet were stupid. In other words, they didn't know what they were doing. And so they kept on hurting themselves. And because my mindfulness was never in my feet. It was always in my head. Because when I was walking arms around, I was thinking about the meaning of the universe, or like how rebirth happens, instead of actually watching where I was walking and being mindful of that. But having no shoes on and walking through forests, which were, we clean these paths off and make sure they were nice clean paths, but there's so many roots underground, they kept on sort of pushing through, and they were sharp roots, and sometimes you cut yourself on them because you weren't watching where you were going. And not only that, that sometimes there were ants, and they were biting ants. I mean, and they would make you jump, those biting ants in Thailand. They're actually the most painful ants I've ever seen, much more painful than the ones I've seen over in Sri Lanka. Because it's like they sting you. It's like a bee sting. And there's hundreds of them. And so you have to be very careful. And if you're not careful, you're thinking about something else. You step in them and you really get into trouble. Not only that, there's scorpions, there's centipedes, and there's snakes as well. Fortunately, only once I stepped on a snake when I was in Thailand. And I was fortunate because the snake jumped one way and I jumped the other way. If he jumped the same direction, I'd have been in trouble. But you've got to be very careful of your body because there's so many dangerous things over there in the Asia. I remember even one morning, I just had an excuse this one morning, because we were used to stay up all night one day a week, you know, on the moon days, on the Poya days, you know, they call them one power in time. We used to stay up all night meditating one night a week. And I was very strict with myself on that. I'd stay up, probably more than just about any other night, try and keep that practice one day a week. And imagine what it's like. You've been meditating all night without any sleep for 24 hours or more. So you're very, very dull in the early morning. So I'd finished my meditation, done the chanting. Before we were going to go for an alms round, I just went off into the forest to take a pee. It's a forest, a jungle, so you don't really need toilets. You just get the nearest bit of empty forest and urinate in that. And it was just at dawn, and I was tired. So number one, my mindfulness wasn't that strong. And number two, you couldn't see all that clearly. And I squatted down, as you do in Asia, to urinate. You don't stand up, you squat down. And as I was squatting down, I thought I was urinating on a stick. But then the stick started to move. Now my mindfulness wasn't that strong. Because, oh, that's interesting, what's that? And of course, it was a snake. And I was amazing just how calm I was. Because afterwards, I remembered that the most sensitive part of my body was only an inch or two from that snake's mouth. And you boys could understand what I'm meaning. And I was so lucky that snake never bit me on the most private part I had. Because it could have done very easily. Imagine if someone pissed on you in the morning. But it never bit me, and afterwards when I contemplated, I understood why. Because that snake was in a Buddhist monastery, obviously thought it was being blessed by holy water. Well, it's from a monk, and it's nice and warm, he probably loved it. But I wasn't really all that aware of my body, and it could have been very dangerous. So number one, when you become aware of your body, you tend not to bump into things. You tend not to sort of hit your elbows or stub your toes, because you're more aware of where this body actually is. Not only that, you can actually be aware of some of the feelings in the bodies. I know that even doctors tell me that when people get heart attacks, they don't just get a heart attack. They have lots of warning signs beforehand. Now the body's telling you that something's wrong. But the trouble is we're so unaware of our body. Now we're thinking of our plans, what we're going to do, watching the movie, or what we're going to have for dinner tonight, or how we're going to get back home after the retreat, or whatever it is. We're so busy thinking about something else, we're hardly ever aware of our body. And so we miss the signs. And one of the most important signs the body says is to slow down and rest. Now this particular story about my own body contemplation, some of you have heard this before, I'm sure, but it was a powerful experience for me because it helped me positively in my life. It was the story of when I did my final examinations at Cambridge University in theoretical physics, 3-hour exam in the morning, an hour for lunch, and the 3-hour exam in the afternoon, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and even Saturday as well. 6 days in a row, just continuous examinations. And that was really tough. I don't think they do that anymore because even Amnesty International was sort of complain that is against human rights, that's torture, that's far too much stress. A 3-hour exam, morning and afternoon, for 6 days in a row. And the hour, this was final examinations. This was when everything you did at university, again, they don't do that these days, you get tested every year. Everything depended upon that one series of examinations. You passed, you failed, you got your high degree or low degree or whatever. On 6 days, everything else you'd ever done the whole 3 years in a UK university counted for absolutely zilch, nothing. There's 3 hours, there's examinations in the end, that was it. The whole of your university career was down to 6 days. So that was, again, heaps of stress. I often say these days, if only I'd gone to see a fortune teller who told me I was going to be a monk, I wouldn't need to worry so much. But that time I never knew I was going to be a monk, so I really worked hard and I struggled. But my advantage was that instead of taking lunch in that 1 hour break, I had enough wisdom, enough training to forego lunch and do my meditation, because I already meditated by then. So I went back to my room in college, sat down on my cushion and meditated for half an hour. And this is what happened. First of all, I started thinking of my morning examination. What did I do? That question right, that question wrong, whatever. And of course, we all know that the past cannot be changed. And it's very clear, the examination paper had been handed in, I could not get it back again to correct my wrong answers. It was finished, it was done, and I was completely wasting my time thinking about it. We all know that, but how many of you can do that? How many of you know the past can't be changed, but how many of you keep on thinking about it? Because you haven't been trained. You got the idea, it makes sense, but you've got to train yourself to be able to let go of the past, which cannot be changed. I had had that training. I'd learned how to meditate. So for me, it wasn't that difficult to let go of the morning examination and forget about it. And of course, the next thing which came in my mind was the afternoon examination. I started worrying about the future. What should I do? Should I go and pick up the book and do some studying 5 minutes before? And for those of you who remember your time at school or university doing examinations, the one thing came to my mind. My experience was, whatever you studied 10 minutes before an examination never ever comes up, not even once. It's a complete waste of time. And in fact, I remembered the best way I could ensure a positive future, the best thing I could do for those future exams, was actually staying in this present moment and resting. I needed to get my energies back up again. We all know that it's a waste of time thinking about the future. The best way to prepare for the future is resting in the present moment. But how many of you can do that? Especially if it's something important. But I had trained, so I let go of that future. Now this, straight away, the past and the future is where most of the thinking comes, and that's why I've made a huge emphasis in this retreat and all my other meditation teachings. Please, let go of the past, let go of the future. Without that, you can't be mindful of anything. You're just aware of fantasy land, things of the past, which probably never happened anyway, but you can't change them even if they did. And the future, which again is just so uncertain, it's just a waste of time. So we let go of those two things, and then we can be mindful. And this is where I became mindful of my body. Because I wasn't being distracted by past and future, I could actually be aware of what was happening in my body. You know what I saw? I was actually shaking. You know, you may not notice me as a nervous person. Maybe I'm not nervous these days, but I never thought I was nervous. But this was high stress. And when you're in a high stress situation, some of these tendencies, which are usually not there in ordinary life, actually do come to the surface. And I couldn't believe I was physically shaking. But when you notice it, when you're aware of it, you can always do something about it. You can relax. And I knew enough about meditation, I'll be stressing this later on. When you are aware of the body, you can also relax it. Let it go. Ease it. And you use that feedback mechanism which mindfulness gives you. You see the feelings in the body, you see them change, and you know whether they're changing towards more tension or more relaxation. And by noticing what you did, or rather what you didn't do, to make it more relaxed, you can continue on that path and take relaxation to a deeper and deeper level. And so that's what I did. And so soon, my body just completely relaxed and I was calm. I wasn't sort of shaking anymore. I learned how to relax my way out of nervousness, which was a great help, because everybody knows that if you're going to be competing at a high level, whether it's examinations, sport, interviews, or life, that nervousness is a huge hindrance. And when the body is nervous like that, it tires out very quickly. You haven't got much energy. But that was the next thing I noticed, was the energy of my brain was just completely depleted. I was really tired, drained, worn out. And it's obvious, you can understand why. I've been working 3-hour examination in the morning, up early, doing something which I thought was really important, theoretical physics, for 3 hours, a heap of sums. That really does drain you. It was natural to be expected, but I wasn't watching, so I never noticed it. And when I started to have a look and see what my mind felt like, my brain felt like, it was so tired. And even by this time, I knew how to restore my mental energies. Not by thinking and worrying, because that would tire it even more. I was just still. I let it be. I just relaxed with that tiredness. I gave it kindness. I was still. Because I was still, I never tried to get rid of the tiredness, never got angry and upset at it, never did anything about it, just left it alone. I saw it just dissipate and energy starting to come up. If the only thing you learn from this retreat is the energy of the mind comes from stillness, not from work, then you've gained a huge insight into how to energize your mind and how to make it bright, how to bring mindfulness to be strong. And so I just let the tiredness be, and it just dissipated by itself. And soon, after, by the end of the meditation, I was so energized that my mindfulness was very clear. And I was actually happy. My friends told me that I was the only one who went into that examination room in the afternoon with a smile on their face. Because everyone else was so tense, but I had relaxed. And that's one of the reasons I did really well. Now you can see what's happening here. That to get that mindfulness up, you need to be still. And that's why I did very well, because my mindfulness was strong, sharp, the nervousness, and especially the tiredness had disappeared. Now, I always remember that experience of tiredness, because I realized that that happens to so many people in our modern world. I can recognize that in you. Sometimes I recognize it in myself when I'm working too hard. But what I do, I don't keep on pushing. Given half the chance, I go to my cave, sit down, and just do nothing. To learn how to rest and relax my mind. Many of you, you may not know how hard I work. Maybe some of the monks know just how many things I have to do. And then sometimes you have to get up and give a talk in public. And sometimes at the Nolamara temple. You know, when I first go in, there's heaps of stuff to do, administration work, other work. And then before you know it, you're sitting down, there's a whole heap of people coming up to talk to you about the retreat center, about their problems, about this and about that. And sometimes, just before the talk on a Friday night, it's very stressful. And by the time I haven't even decided what I'm going to talk about yet, and there's 300 people waiting for a talk. And sometimes, when I walk into that hall on a Friday night at 7:30, I'm wasted. I'm tired. I'm really sort of worn out. But you know what I do? We have this wonderful thing of half an hour meditation before the talk. And that's where I get my energy back from. So, you know, many of you have heard me do that Friday night talk. I lead you in the beginning and let you go. And then I do my meditation. It gets so still and peaceful. You get all this energy coming up. And at the end of that half an hour, it's just like, you know, you've just woken up in the morning. You're just fresh. Or you had 10 cups of tea or coffee or whatever. And you're sharp, alert, bright. And you give a good talk. And that's actually how I do it. That's how I work. But I notice that sometimes my brain is tired. And I know what to do about it. For those people who haven't got enough body awareness, they don't notice the internal tiredness of you, that's going to make you really sick. I know I'm not a doctor, but I can feel my body, I know my body, and I notice what makes it sick. If you have that tiredness inside of you, and you don't know how to relax it and bring up your energies, you don't know how to rest properly. Which is why, in these retreats, I've always encouraged you to sleep the first few days. You don't have to get up in the morning. You've got to work with your body, not against it. You've got to know it first of all. So that's why that when you get up in the morning, you should have a look at your brain, your body, what its energy level is like. Not whether you want to sleep or you don't want to sleep, but whether you need to sleep. And for most of you, you do need more sleep. That's why I always encourage you to give yourself the benefit of the doubt and sleep more. But this time you should actually be a bit more mindful. See, does my body really need that sleep? Does my brain really need the rest? And if you look carefully, have a bit of body awareness, you start to feel the body and feel the brain. And know the brain, no, it's had its rest. It just needs to be calmed down and get a bit of stillness to get the mental energy up. Physically, you've rested. But mentally, you need stillness, calm, to get this beautiful mental energy coming up. And when you have enough body awareness, you can feel the energies coming up. And you can feel just the body feeling good, the mind feeling strong and bright. That awareness tells you whether you're going in the correct direction or the wrong direction. If you sleep too much, you get dull. And it's not like a dullness because, you know, you need more sleep. It's just because, you know, the body just is telling you, I've had enough sleep, do something. But you're not listening to it. And for many people, that sleep is just an escape. Because the present moment of life is painful, disappointing, unpleasant. If you haven't got something, some manufactured happiness, like a movie or a TV or a radio or some music, if you haven't got manufactured happiness, you don't know how to know happiness, which is not manufactured, which is just right there, then you just go to escape into sleep, or to fantasies or dreams. And that's obviously not the way to go. When you have body awareness, you can actually feel this body, you can understand where it is and what it needs. But it's also, you can learn how to not just relax the brain with stillness and get some mental energy up, you learn how to relax your body and make it nice and loose. Somebody mentioned this at a talk which I gave some weeks ago, I don't know if I mentioned this here already, but they noticed the way that monks are dressed. Actually, I mentioned this in the talk, in the interview room. You know how monks are dressed? You know, really nice loose robes? This person went to a Catholic convent school when she grew up. She said all those nuns, they were just so tight in their dress and their sort of habits. They were just so tight. And they said not only were their dresses tight, but their minds were tight as well. They were just so strict and awful and uncompassionate. He said, I notice that you monks, the way you dress is nice and loose, and your minds are nice and loose and easy and happy. You know, you flow with things rather than being trying to control things. And I notice actually there's something to be said for that. You know, so the dress of a monk, you know, loose and flowing, is very similar to the attitude of mind, loose and flowing. And if you have that loose and flowing attitude to your body, you don't tighten up and tense up where sicknesses begin with. So one of the meditations which I like doing is a standard meditation. I haven't done it, taught it for many years, but I've been teaching it the last year. I think Sister Wayama teaches as well, like a body sweeping meditation. To take parts of the body one by one, put mindfulness on them, and most importantly, add kindness, and actually sweep that attention slowly up your body. Part by part until it goes right to the head, down to the arms, and learn how to relax your own body. Might sound strange, but the first exercise is be aware of your toes. Can you be aware of your toes now? Now relax them. When was the last time you relaxed your toes? Probably only the last time I taught meditation like this, probably. Now you think that might be stupid. What do I need to relax my toes for? Nothing wrong with my toes. Put your attention down there, feel them, send a bit of kindness, relax them, and they do start to relax more. You feel the sensations in your toes become more easy, more open, more comfortable. You find actually, surprise, surprise, you can relax your toes. There's a little bit of tension there. But of course, the tension in the toes doesn't do much harm to you. But you can still relax it. And then you move up to your feet. There's more sensations there. You notice the sensations in the feet. I call that when you notice, when you're mindful of them, I call that just my word, contacting the feet. The mind and the feet join together, contact with mindfulness. And along that communication line, you send some compassion, some metta, loving kindness. And that is a trick of how to relax. Open the door of your heart, be kind, wish your feet well. And then your feet start to feel more relaxed. the sensations change. And you notice that they feel more comfortable. You are relaxing your feet. And you're learning as you go up, you know, from your feet to your ankles, to your calves, to your knees, to your thighs, to your bottom. You're learning how to relax muscles and bones and sinews, whatever. And by the time you get up to your bottom, you know, you've been meditating at least 15, 20 minutes on relaxing, being mindful, watching the feelings in the body, being kind to them, relaxing them. You're quite good at this relaxation business. So when you get to the really sensitive part of your body, you know, this is the organs and the guts, I don't know how many people have got irritable bowel syndrome these days. You can do something about that by being mindful of those feelings and learning how to relax them. First time you won't be able to be that skilled in relaxing, but with training in anything you become very skilled at learning how to relax part of your body. You notice it, send kindness, and feel it relax. See what works, what makes it more easy. One person, when I taught this a couple of months ago, mentioned a very skillful technique. He said, suppose you've got irritable bowel syndrome, you've got like this pain, this knot in your bowels. Just with your eyes closed, when you're sweeping through the body this way, imagine your bowel like, you know, twice the size or three times the size. Just imagine it, like in a sheath, and your real bowel is, you know, just inside. It's got all this space to expand. And just imagine your bowel expanding into this space. So instead of its ordinary size, it's three times, four times the size. And with that little method, when you expand something, the pain, the sensation, actually gets diluted. A lot of time, the pain gets worse when we scrunch up and contract around the pain. That's what inflammations do. They press the pain closer together. So it becomes like a tight board of pain. But when we learn how to expand, and this is just a nice visual exercise to expand things, with expanding the gut, you're also expanding the pain as well. And it doesn't get worse, it just actually gets looser. And it actually gets easier, it dilutes its intensity. It's easier to bear. Also, by expanding, blockages, which is often the cause of pain, get released, and so things start to flow more. So that expansive meditation, it doesn't just have to be with your gut, it may be like a nose ache or something. Whatever it is, just expand it and allow the feeling to move into the bigger space so it doesn't feel so constricted. And you find actually the pain does ease. You're relaxing it and you can carry on that automatic process. You can feel it, you relax it, you can feel it getting more comfortable, you learn how to relax more and more. And you become a very skilled expert on relaxing little parts of your body. As you flow through the whole body, every part of the body, your tummy, your intestines, you can even imagine your livers, your kidney, sorry, your kidneys, one liver, you know, your sort of stomach, if you've got a tummy ache, put your attention on there, and don't tense up around it, that makes it worse. Just learn how to relax the tummy. Relax it and relax it. And little by little, with that kindness, that mindfulness, kindness and mindfulness together, is what makes you relax, which what makes the pain or the sickness heal. You're allowing things to flow. Go right through the body. I've been teaching this at cancer groups, especially people with breast cancer. Women, stop at your breasts. Relax everything in there. Feel it. Notice any sensations. Really relax. And then chances of tumours are very lessened because you can put good energy there. Those people with heart problems or with artery problems, just notice that any feelings there, put kindness there, just relax everything. That feeling of relaxation which you get there gives you a sense of well-being and ease, and that is incredibly healthy for you. And as you go right through the body, I usually go up to my shoulders, relax the shoulders, I notice them, I give the suggestion to be kind, I feel them get more relaxed, but I don't stop, I keep on being kinder, learning how to relax them more and more, and I can feel whether I'm going the right direction. Because it starts to get really loose and easy, just like the flowing rope. I go down even my arms, because sometimes we think, what's the wrong with your arms? You get arthritis later on in your life, so put some energy around your wrists and elbows. Put some kindness, learn how to relax everything, and ease everything. and then the chances of getting such problems diminishes. And go back up to the neck. Everyone who has coughs or irritations in the throat, put your attention there, just relax it. Be very calm and soft and gentle and kind. You're not trying to get rid of the cough, because that is just tension. You're just kind to it, relax, expand, loosen. And you feel that what you do, whether it makes it worse or makes it better, the mindfulness gives you a quick feedback. And if you are going in the right direction, it starts to loosen up, get much easier. You can't maybe get rid of the irritation, but certainly you can lessen it and loosen it up. And then I go up to my face and relax all the muscles in the face, because much of your tension and worry is exhibited on your face. So the face becomes very loose and light. So you're not scrunching up your eyes, you're not gritting your teeth. The face is relaxed. And when your face relaxes, your brain relaxes as well. And that's actually the last thing I do. I go to my brain. Doctors tell me you can't feel any sensations in the brain. But sure, you can imagine them. You can imagine your brain has been pummeled, beaten up, kicked, sort of punched, because that's what you've been doing to your brain most of your life, giving it such a hard time. So it's been bruised by life. And some of you had major traumas and difficulties to deal with. So your brain has got wounds in it. And you just imagine that brain and relax it. And feel, you can imagine these sensations, but they're pretty real. And you can imagine it getting more and more relaxed. You actually learn how to relax your own brain. But if you ever heard how to do that before, but now you're learning how to do it. And what a wonderful thing it is to relax the brain. People tell you, come on, relax. But now you know how to do it. Relaxing the brain. You start to get this feedback straight away. The brain starts to feel just really nice and loose and light. Now, by going through a little exercise, you may think that's just for your good health. And it is for your good health. It keeps you sort of much more fit and free of diseases. And if there is any problem there with hearts or lungs or whatever, you can actually do something about it just with a bit of kindness, the relaxation method. But at the same time, you've found that you have been meditating, you've been focusing on this present moment, and all these worries and concerns which most people find hard to stop, you know, the thoughts, the wandering mind, you haven't been wandering anywhere. You've been focusing on the feelings. Because the advantage of the body contemplation is the body centers you in the here and now. Sometimes you can watch the breath, but you start thinking of what you've got to do next. The body sensations, they're much more varied, interesting, sometimes painful, but sometimes pleasant. There's more than going on. So it really can grab your attention and can keep you occupied for an hour without any problem. Whereas the breath can maybe only keep you occupied for 1 minute or 2 minutes before you get bored and restless. But the body feelings, you can keep with those for a long time because things are going on there. It's much more of a show, which has got a variety to it, than the breath. So it's centering you in the present moment. It's giving you a sense of health and well-being. It's learning also how to relax, otherwise known as calming, which is the meaning of samatha. You're samatha-ing the body. You're calming it, easing it, bringing it to a sense of peace. So it also has the advantage of being a legitimate introduction to the deeper meditations. When the body is nice and relaxed, it feels good. You spend a long time centering the present moment, not thinking. So then, if you go and watch the other part of your body, the breath, it's easier to watch. And number two, you have learned how to relax, you know, your toes, you know, your stomach. You've learned how to relax your brain. Now, you transfer that same mechanism to relaxing your breath. So you're watching the breath, and you're just watching it go in and out. You're just relaxing it, calming the breath. Which is, if anyone wants to look at the book, that's the fourth stage of the Anapanasati. Relaxing or calming the bodily function of breath. So straight away, you're jumping to that fourth stage of Anapanasati. You just learn how to relax the breath. And because you know how to relax the breath, you know what it's like when you have a relaxed body? It feels very nice and you can stay with that relaxed body. Sometimes, you know, try and find similes. What does a relaxed body feel like? What a relaxed body feels like is when you first wake up in the morning and you know you don't have to get out of bed and you stay in that bed and you feel just so nice and cozy. It's not cold because you're under your blankets and your body's nice and rested. You know how cozy you feel in the morning when you first wake up and you don't really want to get up. It's only because you have to go to the toilet or something. And you feel just so nice in your bed in the morning. Now next, another 5 minutes. That's why we have snooze alarms. Because we want to enjoy that lovely feeling of first waking up in the morning, nice and relaxed and easy. And that's what relaxation feels like. Now, you don't want to get out of bed, you don't want to change it because it feels nice. It feels happy and joyful. Now this is what we do when we relax the breath. We just learn by doing the bodily relaxations how to relax the breath. We just relax the breath. And the breath goes in just nice and softly. Oh, that's nice. It just goes out. That's really good. It's so cozy. Just be with my breath. There it goes in again. That's nice. I don't want to go anywhere. Get out of the way. I just want to be with my nice breath. I don't want to get out of bed with my breath. When it's like that, you can understand how samadhi happens. You sustain your attention there, just like you want to stay in bed. You want to just stay with your beautiful breath. It's become beautiful because you know how to relax it. Relaxation is another word for calming the breath. It's called it calming the breath, and sometimes we get too tense, trying too hard to calm the breath. We don't know what to do. We know about relaxation because we all know what relaxation means. We know how to relax. And again, the reason why I really got into this was after that conference over in Sydney in October where the professor said that people who do Vipassana meditation are more tense than if you go over to the spa for the day. And that disgusted me. So what type of meditation is that? You know, when you know, you have to pay money to a spa and you get more relaxed when you meditate. You know, gee, you're in the wrong place then, you know, if you want to sort of learn how to relax. But meditation should be making you more relaxed than going to a spa. And saving a lot of money as well. So if you know these body contemplations, you can really relax much deeper than a spa. And you also know what meditation is. You know your big mistake in trying to watch the breath. Trying to control it makes it more tight and more tense and you can't stay with it because it's such a battle. Relaxation shouldn't be a battle. Just watch this breath. It should be the easiest thing in the world to relax and feel so pleasant. So remember, relax the breath. And if you don't know how to relax the breath, relax the body first of all and get into this relaxation business and understand what it means by testing out on your body and then transferring onto your breath. And for those of you who go deep in meditation, you've got a nimitta coming up. What should you do? Relax the nimitta. Instead of trying to control it, get excited or get afraid, which is what happens when sometimes people see that beautiful light. Ah, they get tense. They don't know how to relax with bliss. Strange, isn't it? They think that, you know, if you've got bliss, you can relax and enjoy it. No, you get tight, afraid, controlling. So when we learn how to relax with the breath, when a nimitta comes up, we just relax with this beautiful nimitta. Just allow it to be really nice. Wow, this is really good. And you relax with it. You're cool, you're at ease. Just hang out with the nimitta. Instead of trying to do something with it. You're learning the relaxation technique. But you start off with the body. And this is one of the advantages of this body contemplation. You can learn how to relax. And you take that skill into the meditation, into the nimittas, everywhere. And it means you go really well in your meditation. So it enhances your ability to meditate. But also, it teaches you something about this body. Because as you contemplate these feelings in the body, yeah, they sort of relax them, but they get painful again afterwards. And there's only a certain amount you can do with relaxing the body. If you've got a gut ache, if you've got like a cold or a flu, there's only a certain, you can alleviate the symptoms, but you can't get rid of them. What you learn from that when you become aware of the body is just basically how out of control this body is. I don't know why it is, but sometimes you're really healthy and you come on retreat and that's when you get your cough and you get your fever. And think, oh, I've been waiting all year for this retreat. Why did I get a cold now? Why did I get a cough now? I was just about to become enlightened and then I sneezed. We call that, you blew it. Why did that happen? And so sometimes what you understand from this body contemplation is also just how unreliable this body is, how out of control it is. And basically it's always an irritation. So first of all, you don't feel guilty or upset when you've got a cold or you're sick. I mention that a lot because so many people, they come and tell me, there's something wrong with me, I'm sick. And that's where you go, there's a couple of doctors here, how many people go into your surgery and say, there's something wrong with me, doctor, I'm sick. And you've heard me say this before, if you are a Buddhist and say that, you have got no understanding of the Dhamma. No understanding at all if you tell the doctor there's something wrong with you. Because sickness is not wrong, it's normal, it's natural. There'd be something actually very weird. You'd be something very wrong if you never got sick from time to time. You'd be like some Martian. You know, you're not human if you're not sick. So you, next time you are sick and you go see the doctor, you should say, doctor, there is something right with me. I'm sick again. Doctor, there's something right with me. I'm dying of cancer. You've got to die of something. There's nothing wrong with it. So straight away you're taking off this mental problem of guilt, anger and ill will towards the natural decay of your body. So nothing wrong with being sick. So if you're sick, enjoy it. At least don't feel guilty about it. I remember just, I forget what sickness it was, some years ago, and I was in the surgery at Byford, the nearest doctor's, and I was waiting for my appointment, feeling terrible, feeling so sort of sick and weak. And that's when I used to go to the prison to go and teach every week. And as I was there just waiting, feeling really miserable, one of the prison officers came in because he had a bad back. He took one look at me and he recognized me. I was the monk who taught meditation. And he said, I never expected to see you in here. That really made me feel guilty. I thought I was like being in a brothel or a bar or something. You know, what do you mean I'm not supposed to be in here? Aren't monks supposed to be sick? Oh, well, you're meditating. You're supposed to be healthy. You're supposed to have no stress. What are you doing in here? But of course, even monks get sick. Even nuns get sick. And there's nothing wrong with that. So just allow it to be. So the body contemplation, it teaches you that you're out of control. The body gets it. So you just have to love it. Have metta towards it. The door of my heart is open to you, sick body. Go just be sick. And I can make peace with you. The body contemplation shows you that sickness is not a problem. We make it a problem. We get tense with it instead of accepting it. And that's often why sickness lasts longer and longer. Why it doesn't heal all that quickly. Because we fight it. We make war with it. We try and control it. And we're fighting a war we can never win because the body does not belong to us. It belongs to nature. The body contemplation teaches us this. It belongs to nature. You give it the course and the conditions. Now you've been working hard. Now you get sort of a bug, low immune system, you get cold. Nature. So it all goes according to cause and effect and you've got very little control at all. You just let it be. Body gets sick, just take a rest. Allow other people. It's wonderful when a nun gets sick, because now she's a great field of merit. She needs care. She needs to be looked after, find out what she likes to eat. And that's one of the things which I was told. As a monk, you should never ask what you want to eat, except when you're sick, then you can ask for whatever you want to eat. So you've got three... you've got a whole menu, the whole of Perth here, whatever you want to eat when you're sick. So exploit it while you can. One of the loopholes. So, actually, when I was sick in hospital with that fever I was talking about, the typhus fever, the first year, I felt really terrible. And I didn't care what you eat when you feel that bad. When I started to get better, because I knew that was a little loophole, I could ask for whatever I want. So when I started to get better, I did actually ask, could I go for some chips and like a fried egg? Because I thought that would be very nice, instead of the Thai food, the rotten fish curry. But you know, my Thai wasn't very good, so you know, the fried egg became like a chicken. And the potato, I forget what they heard for potatoes, but it wasn't potatoes, it wasn't chips at all. So my Thai wasn't good enough to indulge my desires. But never mind. The chicken was nice. But anyhow. But, so when you're sick, you understand this body's out of your control. But there's one thing you can do with this body, which is interesting. When you do the body contemplation, I often contemplate it. When does my body feel the happiest and the most easy? It's not after a good lunch. After a good lunch, it still feels heavy. Even sleeping is just, you know, you have to keep tossing and turning. You wake up, yeah, you feel okay, but it's not really good. What I notice, the only time my body feels really nice is when it's not there, and when I meditate. And that's one of the best body contemplations you could do. To know what the body is like when it's not there. So when you get into these meditations, where you're sitting just watching the breath, and you can't feel the body, you can't feel the legs, you can't feel the nose, you can't feel the head or the arms or the shoulders. You just got the breath there. You will notice something very important. You feel at peace. The Buddha called that kaya prasadi, the tranquility of the body, the calmness of the body. He said that only comes when you stop bothering about the body, when you leave it alone and it starts to disappear. Only then is there not an itch or an ache. One of the things I often do is when I get to this point in such a talk, I look at people and see what they're doing. Someone is sort of scratching their legs, someone is moving their hands, someone is just moving their eyes, somebody is scratching their nose, somebody is moving their head up, somebody is moving their fingers. You can see just how many people are actually moving all the time. They're scratching their ear now. What are you doing that for? Can you ever see someone actually sit absolutely still? Only in deep meditation. Otherwise, this body is always so irritated, there's always something you have to do. Because you've always been doing this, you don't notice just how irritating this body is, how it always needs to be coughed, to be sneezed, to be taken to the toilet, to be fed, to have some water, to lay down, to scratch this, to move that. You just look around you and just see how much people move and ask them why they do that. Because the body is not comfortable at all. It's not still. It's not at peace. The body is an irritation. But because we've been used to that, we don't notice it. How often do you have to just swallow? And do you have to just move this leg or that leg? The reason why we're always fidgeting is to try and get a more comfortable situation. Scratching your ear, whatever you're doing. You just have to look around you. Everyone's doing something. Now that we should be telling us, this body, it does irritate us. And when you stop trying to do things, you just leave it alone. If it wants to itch, it can itch. If it wants to hurt, it can hurt. You just focus on something like the breath. You get to this stage when the body disappears. You can't feel your legs. You can't feel your hands. You can't feel your back. You can't feel your head. You can't feel anything. Just watching the breath, or even going deeper into it like a nimitta. The whole body has disappeared. What you should reflect on, wow, what a relief. When this body disappears, that's the only time you can have some ease of body and peace of body. Now that is a powerful reflection. It shows you that no matter where you go in life, no matter how many spas, how much sex, how many massages, how much medicine, you can never achieve peace of the body anywhere near as much as when you sit down and drop it and leave it alone and get beyond the body. For me, I understand the teaching of the reflection of the body taught by the Buddha has just that main purpose. To understand this body is a waste of time trying to worry about it. You work hard and you still get sick. You scratch and you itch somewhere else. You go to the toilet and now you want a glass of water. It's so demanding. You try and get in a comfortable position. First of all, you start one cushion on a retreat, then two, Then you strike against the wall, then across the chairs. You may try and design the perfect chair, but it will never be perfect. There will always be some irritation there. If you can just sit down and watch the breath and let the body disappear, then you are comfortable. Meditation on the body, contemplation of the body, main purpose is so that you can drop the body. It's not my business, nothing to do with me. And in fact, it's much better when I stop bothering about it and leave it alone. The contemplation is cutting your attachment to your body. I don't mean an intellectual attachment. I mean the practical attachment where we're always worried about trying to get this body healthy, fit and at ease. We know that we've dropped that experiential attachment and the body just disappears. And we're quite at peace with that. I know that some people, when the body starts to disappear, I've had this at this retreat previous years, people have come to me making special interviews. If you want a special interview, you're most happy to scrawl in your name against somebody who's actually cancelled that particular appointment. They come special, and I think, well, what's happened? Did something terrible happen or something good? You just got a jhana or you're just going crazy? And they say, Ajahn Brahm, I was sitting here and my hands disappeared. What's going on? They were spooking. They were getting afraid. I think, look, that's wonderful, your hands disappear. You don't have to fidget them anymore. Oh, is that all right? That's what's supposed to happen. Yes. So they go away relieved. But for many people, that was the first time they couldn't feel parts of their body. And they were just not used to that. And they didn't realize how wonderful it was. So I did a bit of reassurance. And, oh, that's really good. And so the next thing, their legs disappear and their body disappears and the whole lot disappears. And they have a wonderful time. So this body is really a pain. Come on, admit it. And every time it disappears, it's just so nice. So I can't wait to get into meditation. So my whole body disappears. And the sooner it disappears, the more happy you are. You're learning from your experience, not just how to drop the body and be free from it. You're also learning huge parts of the first noble truth, what suffering is. Not an intellectual idea of suffering. No, this body actually is irritating. Not just, when you get sort of a cold, or you get cancer, or you get sort of stub your toe, or you get stomachache, or irritable bowel syndrome. Even if you're in what most people call reasonably good health, it's still irritating. If you can just get beyond that body of meditation, that's so nice. That is one of the other great causes of the peace, the tranquility, the happiness of meditation. Why many people get into it and say, how peaceful it is. One of the reasons it's peaceful, because you don't have to worry about the irritations of the body while you're in deep meditation. If you understand that, you understand the purpose of this meditation, is to uncover that part of the noble truth as well. So contemplation of the body, it does lead to good health, it does center you in the present moment, no matter how irritated, upset, angry, depressed you are. During this retreat, you can always go to the feelings of the body and learn how to relax them. And you find your irritations, desperation goes. It's a very easy meditation to do, but very effective at any time. Even you're on the toilet, you can feel the feelings in your anus as the thing passes. Whatever it is, you can always get into the feelings of the body. You can learn how to relax so you don't get constipation. Whatever it is, at all times on this retreat, you can always do contemplation of the body. When you're sick, healthy, going crazy or whatever, you can always do contemplation of the body. And you learn how to relax. Problems get resolved. In the present moment, you're actually doing the meditation at the same time as healing yourself. And also, you're learning how to let go of the body so you can be free of it. And it makes the deeper meditations far easier. When things disappear, you celebrate their disappearance rather than being afraid of them. And that means you get into deeper and deeper meditations every time. So that's contemplation of the body. So it's not a super and all that other stuff which makes the body actually more of a problem. It's actually learning how to let go of the body. Not to have more aversion to the body, not to have more desire for the body, but how to get more freedom from the body. And that's what the body contemplations are there for. So, anyone got any questions or comments about the body contemplation? Yes. Okay, actually. Hold Arthur. Hold Arthur. Okay. I just got to repeat this because for the tape. He's saying that that you had developed arthritis some time ago, and it was had a lot of hostility, anger towards the pain of arthritis, but then you gave the name Old Arthur. Arthritis, yeah. Yeah, and it worked for you because once you took away the hostility, it became like a friend. Just by giving it like a friendly name, then it began to... What happened next? So how are you today, old Arthur? You told your arthritis, yeah. And it changed it completely. Is it still there?
It's still there.
It's still there, yes. But it doesn't have the same effect upon you. That's excellent. So this is how you contemplate the body. You don't fight it. You have loving kindness towards it. You make it your friend. So can you do that with cancer? Can you do that with a cold? Can you say, cold, the door of my heart is open to you. Come and stay as long as you like. Instead of fighting it and wondering, when's it going to go? When's it going to go? When's it going to go? So that's the way to treat these illnesses. Out of your control, so you might as well befriend them. If you can't beat them, join them, I used to say. Any other questions about the body contemplation? Yes? I know, you know, I thought you were hidden behind someone, but yes, your question first, Helmut.
Do you recommend that if you feel like pain, sometimes the body should be to remove the energy that supports healing?
You can support healing, but the energy should put to any physical feeling of pain, to never be ill will and get out of here, I don't like you. To see if you can put some kindness there, you can just relax it. You never relax it by being fierce with it. You know, like when you come into the interview rooms, you know, despite that cartoon outside, I wasn't fierce with you. If I was fierce with you, you'd get tense and you would never be able to relax. The pain would get worse. So it's the same with the way that I treated you at the interview. That's how you should treat, you know, the pain in the leg. So with kindness, a bit of friendliness, a bit of jokiness, and just relax it. It's important as a monk, actually, for me to learn how to put people at ease. Because some people never seen me before, and the interview, what's that job going to do to me? Sometimes, because you're a monk, you know, sometimes people get too much respect, and they're terrified sometimes. And they won't even talk. If they do talk, they won't really open up and say what they really want to say. So it's part of my job, part of any sort of teacher's job, is to put people at their ease, to relax them, so that communication can happen. So if you're going to communicate with your pain, you've got to put it at ease, relax it, so you can work together. That's why loving kindness is great with the pain. And then it relaxes, you feel it relax. You say, get out of here, no, I'm going to watch you and get rid of you. And you see the pain just sort of get tenser. And get worse. That make sense? Okay, Chris at the back.
Showing off the body, and the body is largely disconnected with the mind.
Okay. Okay, when a person's got some very, very strong emotional reactions, which are, as you say, sort of contained in areas of the body, which, because they're no-go zones, so to speak, that they're numb, you just don't want to feel there because you're afraid of feeling there. It's even like sometimes taking your old hand, your own hand, and just massaging it, feeling it there. Because that tiny bit of kindness actually releases that fear. So that's okay, it's safe. So a bit of kindness releases some of the fear. So even actually taking your own hand to that part of the body and actually massaging yourself, or getting someone else to massage you in those areas. Getting someone to get your foot massaged, because the feet are just the furthest part away from the head, and brings the attention there. And you can actually pick up that attention at other times of the day. So just even physical massage is sometimes quite helpful if you have a no-go zone in the body. As long as that massage is done through kindness. I know that sometimes some people apparently just so averse to physical touch. But if it's from a good friend, someone who you can trust, then that gives that bit of kindness there and the trust, and people can start to feel the body when it's pleasant and kind and overcome their fear of that part of the body. So you can do it to yourself, just massaging part of your body. There was a lady over in Adelaide, her father was a Thai, strong supporter of our monasteries. She was doing a dentist degree in Adelaide. And she started getting great panic attacks. And it was really bad that, you know, she went to see the psychologist at the university. This gave her some medication, but she was at home. She kept missing lecture after lecture until she got so bad she couldn't even get out of the house. Fortunately, she had a very supportive boyfriend who cooked for her, cleaned for her, and almost washed her because she became so incapacitated. But fortunately, because her father was a Buddhist and disciple of mine, her father told her to give me a call. So from Adelaide, I just gave her the simple counselling of, next time you have a panic attack, where is that registered in your body? Feel the physical sensations. And then when you feel those physical sensations, get your hand or ask your boyfriend to massage you in that area and sort of to relax everything. And once that physical feeling is relaxed, then go back to your mind and see where that emotion is. Because I knew what happens. Because when you actually massage the body, you look at the physical manifestation of that emotional block and deal with the physical manifestation. And you go back to the emotional thing and it's lessened. And it only took her about 2 or 3 months. And she was so amazed. She would call me every few days. And I said, well, keep massaging. If you can't get your boyfriend, massage it yourself. Get the feeling down there, calm the physical feeling, and your panic will actually decrease. And it decreased, 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 and it completely went. She managed to get back into university. She worked really hard and got sort of, I think, a first class in her degree at the end of the year. And she was so impressed with me that she told me only afterwards. She'd actually written off to the government to propose me as Australian of the Year. I never got it, of course, someone else got that award, but she was so happy that, you know, that this simple meditation had worked when the psych couldn't treat her. And it's very simple, and she also learned how if this happens again, you know, without the medication, just, you have a panic, fear, anger or whatever, it manifests in the body somewhere, and if you've got some body contemplation going, go to the physical feeling, just relax it with your massage, or just, you know, with a hot water bottle or something, just to bring energy there and kindness there, relax the whole thing. And you find the emotional part of it is also relaxed. But it's so hard for people to relax their mind. But they know how to relax their body. And the two are connected. So if you relax the body, the mental counterpart relaxes too. So panic and fear, just by massaging your body, disappears. That's one thing you can do, is to try and find that part of the body and just physical touch. But kindness, not hitting yourself, but just very soft and gentleness. Bring some loving kindness and attention to that part of the body. But also go very gently and slowly. Okay, so that's the talk. To make you heal, to give you good health, psychological well-being, and everything else, and also enlightenment the same. It's a really good deal, this retreat. You get everything. Just a short amount of money. But now we have our interview times. So, for those of you who want to meditate more or have a walk or massage your body or something or other, just do whatever needs to be done. So have a nice morning, and you'll soon be doing the tummy massage in 2 hours' time, when you can massage your tummy with lunch.